We are joined right now by a UFC lightweight. He was an All-American at Missouri, a three-time Bellator lightweight champion. He signed with UFC in September. He defeated Dan Hooker in the first round at UFC 257. It was an electric performance. We are joined right now by Michael Chandler. Michael, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
Jim, man, I'm doing wonderful, and thank you for the opportunity to be on.
Michael, thank you for making time for the show. It's great to have you on. So your win at UFC 257, honestly, was one of the more electrifying debuts I've seen ever. Can you take me back to before the fight? When you were getting taped up and you were preparing to head to the cage, what kind of thoughts, given the journey you've taken, what kind of thoughts were you having and how were you feeling walking to the cage?
You know, it was, I feel like everything kind of came full circle, and all roads led to that moment. You know, I'm new to the UFC, but I'm not new to the sport. Been in the sport now for 12 years, won a couple world titles, had a lot of ups, couple downs, and, really more than anything, just felt full of gratitude. You know, I was back there warming up, back there walking the halls, back there getting taped up, fighting back tears, honestly, but they were good, happy, emotional tears, just feeling extremely blessed to be able to do what I do for a living, to feel extremely blessed that a couple dead-end roads throughout my career led to this great opportunity as the co-main event on one of the biggest pay-per-views in recent history. And, you know, there was a lot of times where I thought the door opening to the UFC wasn't going to happen. Turns out it did happen, and it turns out I got a great opportunity. Turns out I took full advantage of the opportunity, and now here I am getting the opportunity to talk to Jim Rome. So it's a good life.
That's a good life, and I'm feeling some gratitude myself, and I feel like I've got a really good opportunity to talk to Michael Chandler myself. Now, Michael, you mentioned you spent 12 years outside the company thinking about the possibility of the UFC and joining the UFC and guys that you might face. As an example, you told Dana that when you were fighting before, you were never actually training to fight the guy in front of you. You were always training to fight the number one guy in the world, and that was always a UFC fighter. Where or why did you develop that particular mindset?
You know, I truly believe that, you know, this sport, people call it a young man's sport. It definitely is more of a marathon than a sprint. I don't think it's a young man's sport. I think you're going to see most of the superstars, most of the guys competing at the highest level are post 30. But the problem is most people get into this sport as a teenager, as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, and whether it be making the wrong decisions or whether it be you know, fizzling out, they never quite make it to their full potential. And for me, you know, I always operated my entire career that God put me on this planet and to be put onto this platform. And maybe I wasn't in the show that people wanted me to be in. Maybe I wasn't fighting the names that people wanted me to fight. So it was hard for me to stake my claim as the best lightweight on the planet. But I knew that if I could win fight after fight through patience and through the season of being outside the UFC, that eventually that door would probably open. So I just always lived with the championship mentality. I lived my life like a champion. I lived my life as if I was fighting the UFC champion, even if I was fighting a guy who wasn't even close to ranked as high as him. And that's how we should always operate as athletes. You know, we get a phenomenal opportunity to be put on a platform to make a great living for ourselves and our family and do something that people are drawn to, especially the sport of mixed martial arts. Men and women alike, people of all ages across the globe, as far as the East is from the West, they are drawn to mixed martial arts. They are drawn to hand-to-hand combat. And for us to give anything less than our best every single day is really to sacrifice these gifts that we've been given. And I just refuse to do that. And now it's finally paid off. Here I am getting my UFC debut. And now hopefully getting that belt around my waist here this calendar year.
It's really powerful. Now, when you mentioned Michael Chandler, my guest, that I want to live my life as a champion, you know, you're talking about living your life of a champion regardless of what show or which company you're representing. You also said, I feel like I'm right where I need to be, quote, physically, mentally, and spiritually to go out and win a UFC title. And that back to that point about living your life as a champion, what does that mean exactly, to live your life as a champion? How do you live a life of a champion?
Well, I think it's what I tell the young kids in college, especially. Listen, the girls are always going to be there. The party's always going to be there. The beer's always going to flow. The bright lights and loud music, they're always going to be there. There's just as many parties to go to here at 34 years old as there was at 24 and there was at 14. So getting the most out of your body means taking care of it. Getting the most out of your body means putting the right things in your body. Getting the most out of your body means surrounding yourself with the right people, the right scenarios, and the right habits that are going to use that are going to put you in the best possible scenario to use this body to make an income, make an impact, and be put on a platform. It means taking care of yourself mentally. It means believing, truly believing that you were put on this earth for great things. You know, Jim, I've spent a lot of time in my life second-guessing myself, my abilities, and a lot of it had to do with me being a very small guy from a small town who was taught to do small things. I didn't have hair under my armpits, so I was 19 years old. I was 103 pounds soaking wet in high school. Girls thought I was cute, but not cute like I want to date you, cute like you're like my little brother, right? So I always kind of had this little guy, I don't really deserve great things mentality. And it wasn't until I went to college and started surrounding myself with great people and high-functioning individuals and then taking extreme ownership of my mind, my mindset, and my mental fortitude, my mental toughness, and really my self-image, that I started to realize that, wait a second, I can do great things. Wait a second, I can be a champion in life, not just inside the cage, but outside the cage. So taking care of yourself physically, mentally, and spiritually, and then from then on, just throwing yourself headfirst into the fire because you're going to be galvanized by that fire. And win, lose, or draw, you know you put your best foot forward at all times.
My guest is Michael Chandler. I think there is absolute gold in that response. Michael, this whole notion of like coming up, I just didn't have that self-confidence. I didn't have that belief. I saw myself a certain way. I had to get, quote, ownership of my mindset and change it. How did you go about doing that? What was your process for doing that?
You know, for me, I guess I had the luxury of having a college wrestling career in which I fell short. And I graduated in 2009. And the moment that I graduated, Jim, I swear I had this epiphany. The moment that I graduated, I looked back at my entire career, the last 5 years of my life, that I dedicated my entire being, my full self, my 100%. I was the hardest worker in the room. I did more reps in the gym. I did more sets in the gym. I did more hours in the practice room. I told everybody I wanted to be a national champion. I told everybody I wanted to be an All-American, but I didn't truly believe it inside myself. And then when I graduated and I fell short, I didn't win a national title, but I took fifth. I became an All-American, which was great in its own right, but it wasn't my ultimate goal. I looked back and immediately said, Michael, why did you do that to yourself? Why did you refuse to believe in yourself? Somebody has to be the best. Why shouldn't it have been you? Why shouldn't it have been Michael Chandler, who put all the time in, did more than everybody else, worked harder than everybody else, did every single prerequisite to becoming a champion? Why did he not believe in himself? So it was from that day on that when I got into mixed martial arts, I made a promise to myself, my family, everyone around me, and to my almighty God who gave me these abilities that I was never, ever going to look at myself as less than anymore, and I was going to take full ownership that I was put on this earth for great things. And then from then on, it was accruing and accumulating the tools, reading the right things, watching the right things, getting myself around the right people, building myself up every single day, visualizing myself as a champion. And then brick by boring brick, you build the self-confidence, the self-image, and the self-love to be able to go out there and accomplish greater and greater things. So I was that small guy who from a small town who didn't believe in himself, and now I stand before you today, a guy who still has his rough days, a guy who still falters at times, but a guy who truly believes that I was put on this earth for great things.
Michael Chandler is my guest. You know, they always say, Michael, we are what we eat. I take that one step further. To your point, we are what we consume, right? We are what we eat, but we are what we read. We are what we listen to. It's all the above. Let me ask you this. I had Jordan Burroughs on the show last week. Amazing guy, right? Amazing athlete, great wrestler. And the story is you walked on in Missouri as a wrestler. People have always asked him about getting into MMA, and he admitted that, like, when he follows Conor McGregor, he sees the yachts, he sees the Rolexes, he loves that, but he does not love the idea of getting hit in the face. What was the transition like for you from wrestling to MMA and getting hit in the face?
You know, for me, luckily, I didn't mind it. You know, I was kind of a, you know, shout out to Jordan Burroughs, one of the greatest wrestlers on the planet. He's actually a guy who I wrestled in college. He won my bracket in 2009 at 157 pounds. One of the toughest guys I ever wrestled. Obviously. But for me, I was that hard-nosed, lead with your face, take damage, to wear a guy down and beat him in the third period kind of guy, you know? So when I got into the sport of mixed martial arts, the idea of getting hit in the face, it didn't scare me. And as soon as you get hit a couple times and you realize that you're not made of glass, you almost want to keep continuing to push yourself even further and further into that fire, you know? And for me, obviously you gotta make the calculated risk, and you gotta be a little conservative. You can't go out there and fight with reckless abandon like I did in my first few fights, and I've kind of cleaned things up, and I've become more of a well-rounded and more of a veteran fighter, where I don't have to, I keep my foot slightly on the gas instead of pedal to the metal at all times, throwing myself into kind of precarious situations where I'm going to take damage. And you know, as I've gotten older, I've gotten more and more confidence. And when you get more and more confidence, you have confidence in your abilities to evade punches and just cover up and block punches. So I, luckily for me, I didn't mind it. Luckily for me, it almost was a sense of empowerment being able to be battle tested, if you will. And I, like I said, man, I just truly believe I was made for this sport, and I've been given some great abilities and want to keep on taking it on all the way to the next world title.
All right, so what about that, Michael? Before I let you go, after the win, Dana White was talking about the possibility of a fight between you and Dustin Poirier. Is that a fight that interests you?
That is definitely a fight that interests me. To be honest with you, Dustin Poirier was the first fight that I tried to get inside the UFC. I think I match up extremely well against him. I got a ton of respect for that man inside the octagon and outside the octagon. He's a champion in his own right. I got to watch him cage side go and put away Conor McGregor, one of the greatest of all time. At this point, the performances that we both put on, I think, warrant that next title shot. Listen, Khabib Nurmagomedov is the greatest to ever do it, but we all know he's stepping away. Let's let him step away. Let's relinquish the belt. Let's put it on the line between me and Dustin Poirier here in the next quarter. And I promise you, after that fight, I will be the UFC champion. I hope that's the one that happens. And hopefully we can celebrate after.
Hey, Mike, really quickly, like my thought about the UFC, the great thing about the sport is not only do the best always fight the best, but everybody loses. It's just, that's my opinion, because there's so many different disciplines and so many different ways to get hurt or get beat. Habib's undefeated and never, I mean, he hasn't even lost a round practically. In your mind, were he to come back, is he beatable?
He is. Everybody is beatable, and it is because this sport is... It's just designed in that way. Eventually, you lose. Everybody loses. Nobody goes undefeated except for Khabib, essentially. So he is beatable. There's a recipe to beat him. I believe I have that recipe. I believe I have the wrestling offense and defense. I believe I have the power in my hands, and I believe I have the cardio, the wherewithal, and the veteranship and the cage awareness to be able to put together a great performance to be able to beat Khabib. And as you said, everybody can be beaten. Anybody can be beaten on any given night. Just because he has looked unbeatable, which I do agree with you, by the way, it would almost be somewhat of a quasi surprise to myself in certain scenarios, beating him or stopping the takedown or taking him down or inflicting a lot of damage on him, because we haven't seen that a ton. But just because we haven't seen it doesn't mean it can't be done. And I just believe I have the recipe to do it. I haven't had the opportunity to really talk about it until now. Now that I'm signed with the UFC, now I can say it. And as you saw in my post-fight speech, if you know he's got to come back and he's got to beat somebody in his quest for 30-0. So why not beat me? You know, why not try to beat me? And I hope I get that opportunity. It definitely won't be next fight. Maybe it's Poirier next. I win the title. Maybe I defend the title one time, and then maybe he gets bored and comes back. That would be best case scenario.
This is an amazing conversation, Michael. How about one quick thing off the board? I want to ask you about a former teammate, if you don't mind, a guy that I love, Ben Askren. It's a big Ben Askren house. I love this guy. I get such a kick out of him. What's your reaction to him coming out of retirement to box YouTube star Jake Paul? Like, I mean, in a fight 10 times out of 10, Ben beats his ass, but boxing is something a little bit different. Like, what are your thoughts on that? How do you think that would go, and is that a good idea?
Listen, I think it's a great idea, number one. Number two, Ben Askren is one of the most remarkable human beings on the entire planet. Everybody sees the big fro and the loud, boisterous attitude, but Ben is one of the most giving and full of humility men I've ever met in my entire life. He's one of the reasons I got into mixed martial arts. He's a heck of a competitor. The funny thing is, it doesn't surprise me. If you know Ben well enough, nothing should ever surprise you. the man is a wild card. He marches to the beat of his own drum. Now, what I will say about the actual matchup, Jake Paul is not a great boxer. Ben Askren is not a great boxer. Ben Askren, quite frankly, the weakest of his attributes is his ability to strike on the feet. But I think depending on the referee, depending on the rule set, depending on how the promotion is set up, Ben is going to be able to get his hands on Jake, do some dirty boxing, some underhooks, some pushing, some pulling. You're going to see, I think, and Ben may be penalized for it. Ben may be pulled off of him, maybe broken up a lot. But you're going to see Ben close the distance. You're going to see Ben get his hands on him. You're going to see Ben wear out Jake Paul, because there's a difference between boxing at distance and throwing punches and having a guy in your face, putting pressure on you, pushing you back up against the ropes. You got to remember, yes, it's boxing, but Ben knows how to move, maneuver, and manipulate another human body, his opponent, with his hands. So it's going to be very interesting to watch the dirty boxing, watch the clinch game, and then also watch Ben's toughness. I mean, listen, we saw Ben get knocked out cold, but listen, King Kong himself would have got knocked out by that George Masvidal knee. Ben traditionally has a phenomenal chin, a great chin, and the wherewithal to be able to push Jake Paul around a boxing ring for 8 3-minute rounds. Mark my words, I think he finishes Jake Paul later in the fight.
Michael Chandler coming off that sensational performance against Dan Hooker, UFC lightweight, All-American in Missouri. Michael, I could not have been more impressed by what I saw in the cage on Saturday. Could not be more impressed by what I just heard from you here. I appreciate you. That was a great conversation. So glad you and I came together. We have to do that again soon.
Sounds great, man. As I said, it's an honor. Been a fan of yours and watching and listening to your show for years. So it's all great. It's all come full circle, and you can holler at me whenever, man. I'd love to be on.
My man, I appreciate the relationship. I appreciate the phone call. I appreciate the kind words. Much respect to you.